Hello there, ladies and gentlemen. It is currently February 19th, 2010, and I am Day 9, and this is the TeamLiquid.net StarCraft II Beta Podcast. Rather than just blab at you for like 30 minutes, I actually invited a good old buddy of mine, my friend Tristan. Say hello to everybody, Tristan.
Hey, everyone.
All right, and for any of you who don't know who I am and don't know who Tristan is, let's just go ahead and do a handful of introductions. So, I'm Day 9, my name's Sean Plott. I've played StarCraft forever. I've been playing for the last 11, 12 years. I have my own show at livestream.com/StriderDoom that all of you should watch every day of the week. But yeah, I pretty much only played StarCraft. I actually kind of missed out on most of the other games. I actually didn't even play any of the Dawn of Wars. And Tristan, I'll let you introduce yourself.
Sure, I'm Tristan Brand, aka Mantra. I've actually been playing for Forever Times 2. Started off with Warcraft 2 in Cali at the tender age of 10 in 1994 and 1995. Went from there to StarCraft, to Warcraft 3, back to StarCraft, and on to StarCraft 2. And don't see really any reason to stop.
Yeah, seriously. You are an ancient dinosaur among gamers. I'm actually curious, did you play Dawn of War at all when it came out?
I did not. Yeah. I am a Blizzard RTS elitist.
Well, in that case, let's talk a little bit about general impressions of StarCraft 2. So, I don't know about you, but I'm like the luckiest human being in the world to have a beta key. I'm like so happy. I don't even know how we both got it on the same day. I mean, for the most part, it just looks like a really solidly done strategy game. I currently don't really have any qualms, except for the fact that it's a pretty complex system, so I need a while to just sort of study it. I don't know if you have anything more to add, but...
Yeah, I mean, just first impressions, it's just a fucking blast to play. Like, it's really, really fun. It's fast-paced.
Oh, it's feels, so fast, yeah.
It doesn't feel like an Alien game, and that's like, hey, this is definitely a sequel to StarCraft. Your intuition from StarCraft lets you jump into it. But at the same time, once you sort of get past the... Once you get into it a little bit, there's actually a lot of very, very significant changes, which cause it to play quite... not significantly differently, but different enough that it's definitely can be a tough transition. But man, it's just really fun. Like,
yeah,
I was supposed to be doing work today, and all I could think about is playing StarCraft 2.
Yeah, it's so fun. I mean, even with like the Day 9 dailies, like today was the first, or actually yesterday, because today's Friday. Yesterday was the first day that I actually did a replay of myself. I was literally like smiling the whole time because I was just like so giddy that it's actually, oh, look, it's my own StarCraft 2 game. And of course, there's a game of you just completely demolishing me. So I want to move on to a little bit to talk about like beginner mistakes and stuff. And also, because I mean, you played StarCraft right when it came out, and you've played a lot of games right when they've come out. And you also had the opportunity to come back to StarCraft in the last 2 years. I know you've been playing a lot. So I'm curious if you can first talk about what beginner mistakes that you've seen in like every single strategy game that you've played. And also, we'll get to the StarCraft question in a little bit about that big gap in time. But let's talk about newbies, man.
Sure. I mean, I think the sort of classical beginner mistake is over-reliance on passive defense. And what that turns into as they go from complete newbie into, you know, sort of a slightly more well-worn beginner is just passive gameplay. And not only are they playing passively, but they sort of either subconsciously or consciously assume their opponent is playing passively. And the idea of the fact that the game is much more dynamic and aggressive and is actually sort of this constantly flowing thing where, you know, people are building early units, they're attacking, they're teching, they're transitioning. It doesn't quite sink in.
Well, like, what about even people like, you know, the community at TeamLiquid.net where we're all obsessed with, you know, like the pro matches and everything, and we think that we get it, you know, and that sort of thing. Like, I mean, do you think that that static defense or just that general passivity still bleeds through?
I think it does bleed through. It probably goes definitely. It's no longer a conscious thing because I think the people who are more well-informed are definitely, I mean, they're better than that level. At least in term intellectually better, if they're not able to actually execute. you know, a lot of the but like the root of the mistake that the newbies are making is that they're making assumptions about the game and they're letting those assumptions stick in their head and then become part of their part of their intuition. So like everyone has sort of an intuition for how they play the game, and how they think the game works. And what people need to realize is that it's really important that your intuition matches up with reality, like how the game actually works.
I mean, like with Mutalisk, like I remember when I just saw that you could select infinite units, I was like, oh, well, Mutalisks are imbalanced. And then, of course, the instant I spend at least 30 seconds to a minute playing with them, I'm like, oh, okay, this is just not nearly as big a deal as I thought. You know, because in StarCraft 1, if I had like 30 Mutalisks stacked, then I would say that that's fair in my book, because then I wouldn't have to think of any new builds. I could just only make Mutas, and that would be totally kick-ass.
Yeah.
But, oh man, like, it seems to be that, I think that's the best way to describe it, that, like, people are just applying their good old StarCraft 1 logic to StarCraft 2, not as a way to help them learn, but as a way to just point at things and be like, that is so unfair.
Yeah, and what's dangerous about that is because a lot of people, if you press them on this, will probably just say, well, you know, I'm just complaining, it's not a big deal. But the problem is if you get stuck in that mindset where you, you know, it's like, man, you know, this matchup's unfair, or this unit's unfair, or this strategy's unfair, your brain focuses on that and sort of diffuses the blame away from yourself. It's like, well, what could you be doing to stop this?
Are you making an Artosis reference? Are you trying to let me know the DTs really are a fair unit?
Maybe. I mean, I don't.
Yeah, I mean, I totally know what you mean, though. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I used to do that, especially as a young little StarCraft nerd, where I would say things like, oh, man, oh, it's just bunker rushes. That was a dumb loss. I'm not going to worry about bunker rushes. And then I went to, like, a major tournament, and just, like, my first round opponent bunker rushed me and just won. And I was like, I just like, couldn't believe that I just lost, like, that easily first round. And the best part is, he immediately lost second round to nobody, you know, because it was Protoss, and, like, you know, you can't bunker rush that so well. So I was just, like, so embarrassed. And I was like, wait a minute, let me just, like, practice against bunker rushes. There's no such thing as fair and unfair anymore. There's just me needing to stop bunker rushes, because I know that same nerd's going to show up to the next tournament. And that, I think, has just been, like, super helpful, just to never assume imbalance or unfairness, just to always direct the blame at what your play was and sort of work.
Exactly. And it's hard. It's not like, I mean, it's very, very difficult to sort of objectively consider things like that and, you know, work out.
I'm not too
out.
Happy after I lose anyways. I don't exactly. Pick them up and like, oh, cool, I'm going to look at things clearly, and I'll put on my Dare Bear t-shirt. Like.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's really, really, really hard. And it's something you have to just be absolutely focused on to try to fight your the sort of biases that are constantly sitting in your head. But I think it's absolutely essential to sort of improve.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And one thing I wanted to ask you, because, like, I've played StarCraft from, like, the very beginning of time, so I want to talk a little bit about that right now, just that the way StarCraft evolved over time, it started out with just every little weird rush strategy in the book, every opening possible was thrown right out the gates when StarCraft first opened up. But when I say opening, I don't mean like, you know, on day two, some guy was going one Vulture fast expand against Zerg and then having a beautiful Medic Marine transition. I mean, people were just being like, oh, can I bunker rush all three races? You know, oh, I can float factories. I guess I'll make that my standard play. You know, so there's a lot of that junk going on. Then we had Boxer doing all this stuff with Micro. And, you know, StarCraft just kept evolving and evolving and evolving. And then there was this big, long period where I Love Ooove learned how to macro really well. And then until we hit nowadays, where everyone is assumed to have phenomenal macro, amazing control, and these really, really clever builds with these hard-to-break transitions. And I am super interested to see how it's going to happen with StarCraft 2, because I don't really think that anyone knows. Because, I mean, like, with StarCraft 2... someone like me can look at the way that strategy works in StarCraft 1 and say, how can I try to make that work right away? And I don't know if anyone's going to just jump in and do, like, the cheesing type stuff right away. And I'm curious if you can comment a little bit, because I know you played StarCraft right at the start, didn't play for a few years, and then at the end, you've been playing, like, the last 2 years or so, again, just hopping back in,
right,
thanks to my peer pressuring. First, I drew you in with little BGH, and then you've been playing Icy Cup.
You did. Is all your fault.
I'm quite adventurous.
It's interesting because, I mean, so StarCraft 1, the only real competitive RTS knowledge people had was from Warcraft 2 and, I guess, Red Alert. And I'm not going to speak from the Red Alert perspective because I never played it.
Yeah, what did the Warcraft 2 players do? Did everyone just try to tower rush? Warcraft,
yeah, I mean, stuff like offensive cannoning definitely was a thing people were doing from the start. What's interesting, though, is stuff we consider so stupidly fundamental and obvious was actually, like, a big deal. Like, I still remember the first few months StarCraft came out, and I was playing mostly on Kali at that point, and at the time, since the Kali players were the experienced Warcraft 2 players, they were most, at the time, again, there was no Koreans here, so it was mostly, they were mostly better than Battle.net players. And there was definitely this sort of cliquish feel to it. It's like, oh, I'm a Kali player. We're going to play on Kali instead of these stupid VNet newbies.
Good thing those cliques don't exist anymore.
Yeah, I know. I'm glad that we have a diversified equal fan society of StarCraft players. But yeah, so like, I still remember, and again, this is, I don't know the exact timetable, probably the first few months, the concept of three hatchery Zerglings.
Huh. Oh, like one base, three hatch Zerglings.
Yeah, one base, three hatch Zerglings, because if you make three hatcheries, you can make a lot of Zerglings. This does not seem like a monumental event, but when someone started doing it, and I mean, probably people were doing it from day one, but it didn't catch on, it was just like, wow, that's amazing. And I remember I found out about it fairly early somehow, and still remember, actually, I played against Tillerman, who old school people may remember was a top Warcraft 2 player for a while.
And if you don't remember him, he is a big goddamn deal.
Yeah, he was a top StarCraft player for a while as well. Very, very good. Well, when he first made the transition from Warcraft 2 to StarCraft, I managed to catch him before he got particularly good, which, you know, probably for him was 6 games, so I probably caught him on game 2. I did this three hatch Zerglings, and it just crushed it. And I want to be clear, you know, I'm pretty good at RTSs compared to the general population, but I was never competing with anyone for like best player ever, and which Tillerman was. And this was not even close. And like, I remember he said, "Wow, how did you do that?" And I said, "Oh, I made three hatchies." He's like, "Wow, that is so many Zerglings. I had no idea." And this was a top Warcraft 2 player, and he was, you know, surprised by this concept. And it wasn't because he was a moron. It was because everyone just wasn't thinking about the game the way we think about it now. And it's very, very difficult to go back and understand that perspective. I mean, I would say it's really impossible. But that's what it was like. Fast expanding with Protoss against Zerg, when Gurr started doing that, when he publicized his, he had this particular build order where he fast expanded and got, I think, 25 speed zealots and then rushed the Zerg.
Oh, yeah.
That was a major revelation. Like, it was just huge. It wasn't like people hadn't fast expanded, but it was relegated to the sort of gimmicky. You know, it's like, I guess he can fast expand, but he's probably just going to get rushed out. But no, Gurr was like, well, screw this. I'm going to absolutely crush everyone who's ever played this game.
With only zealots. And,
like, when he started doing that, like, I don't know if there was any Zerg. I mean, people know that how dominant Gurr was. And let me tell you, it was not close when he did stuff like that. And it changed how people saw the game. And these were moments, you know, in the first 6 to 8 months that the StarCraft was out. That actually might have been even a year out. And it's just these monumental events in terms of how people viewed the game. And then those events sort of, I think, just started happening faster and faster and faster until they no longer became decipherable. But at the time, it was like, you know, they were very, very discreet. It's like, wow, this happened because this player said this. I guess I should mention probably one of the big reasons for that is there were no replays back then. So the dissemination of information was very, very different.
Yeah, seriously. And like here in StarCraft 2, like, yeah. I don't know if any of you have actually heard about the replay features. You get like every information about every APM, unit income, everything. And you know what's bullshit? The APM, I think, is artificially low. Like, I'm playing as fast as I can, and the observers are like, whoa, Ghost, you have a solid 80. And I'm like, what? That really sort of humiliates my E-penis.
But I think, like, it gives you negative APM when you read the tech tree.
Oh, man. Oh, God. Yeah, I've actually been doing a lot of that, except now I'm actually good enough to pause it. I know what that hotkey is. But, you know, this makes me wonder, because I think that, like, the first big revelation people are going to have are with these, like, new macro mechanics in StarCraft 2. Oh my god, it's just like out of control. Okay, so Tristan and I were actually talking about this before the cast. There's some people who've been arguing that macro is now easier in StarCraft 2 because you can like multiple buildings select. I'm actually starting to think it's going to be a lot harder. Like that there is have no fear about not having enough, or excuse me, about having too much APM. It's just like absolutely outrageous. Like, okay, so Protoss, their Nexus has energy, and for 25 energy, you can do a Chrono Boost, which speeds up any building by 50% for 30 seconds. So, you know, it means you can be building your Zealots faster, you can be upgrading at your Forge faster, you can be making your probes faster. And I have no idea how to do it. I mean, I don't know what the right way to do it is. I mean, do you have any thoughts on, like, cool stuff that's come out of that? I know it's really hard to remember every 25 energy to use it again, or whether I should be using it that often.
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky, because, like, I mean, we can just start even theorizing about all the little timing pushes this can cause. You know, you can do basic stuff. Like, you can just, every 25 energy, you use it on your Nexus to speed up your economy. Or you could just not use it on your Nexus, use it on your Gateway to try to speed up an early rush. Or you can do stuff like, I mean, I'm theorizing here, I have no clue if this is effective at all, but you can save it up and get maybe like an early Forge and go for a super fast +1 attack upgrade.
That's what I was thinking. You could do some sort of cute timing push. I have no idea
exactly
if there's any good like critical upgrade that's based on that +1 attack and any upgrade. I mean, StarCraft 1, you could get it to like pump your Zealots up against Zerglings.
Yeah.
Already Zealots are like a lot better than they were before. Either that or Zerglings are worse. I don't know. It just feels unfair. I just want to be able to only make Zerglings and get away with it.
Yeah, it's definitely... It just opens up a lot of possibilities. And then later in the game, it's just practically impossible to keep up with using it.
Yeah,
especially when you have multiple Nexus.
See, part of me feels like just using it on gateways just over and over and over again to produce is not like the best way to go about it. Because in a sense, if you just saved up 150 minerals and built another gateway, you would be accomplishing essentially the same thing. So basically that Chrono Boost is like, oh no, you just get to save that $150 and use it on something else. But you know, if you can use it on like an upgrade, that to me feels like a lot better, especially for like late game situations. Just like
keep
casting it on your upgraders.
I mean, it can speed up various aspects of your build order, and it can sort of, I mean, depending on how, it might be too subtle of an effect to actually be as big of a deal as we're making it out to be, but like, you know, you can imagine having like this sort of standard set build order where you have a good idea what you're doing for the first 6 minutes, but depending on where you use your Chrono Boost, that makes little differences to your timing about when you can attack and how many units you have when your opponent attacks.
Yeah. Well, let's move on and talk a little bit about Terran, because they're also weird. Well, I mean, all the races have, like, weird additions. Okay, so first of all, just note for Protoss that even if you're able to go back and select all your gateways and spam like crazy, you have to select all your nexuses individually and tell them what you want them to be chrono boosting and that sort of thing. So that's funky. So with Terran, you can upgrade your command centers so that they can do a scanner sweep, which is, you know, totally normal. But then you can summon this mule that's like a super SCV that only stays there for 90 seconds. Or, and this is like my favorite thing in the universe, it is the 50 energy for a supply depot. What you do is you take 50 energy and you cast it on one of your depots and it doubles the amount of supply that supply depot provides for like the rest of the game. So it's so great for me because I always forget my depots, right? Oh, it's the easiest thing in the world. I was like playing against you. And of course, because I'm awful, I haven't spent a single drop of energy at either of these command centers. So I just like spammed on all my supply depots and then just, you know, ignored it for like much of the game. But you can kind of see that, again, the add 8 supply to a supply depot is equivalent to saying, just hold on to $100. You don't have to spend that $100 on another supply depot. You can just use energy instead. So I think that there might be some sort of cute timing rushes where you end up getting an extra barracks that you wouldn't normally be able to support, and then you instead use your command center just constantly be adding on extra supply boosts for a little period of time.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Have you used the mule much? I mean, you've actually played a lot more than I have.
only just started using it. I was just ignoring it, not because I didn't think it was good or anything. I just hadn't
just entered like too much stuff.
My brain.
Yeah, it's like my brain's already full of trying to remember that everything is on the left side of the keyboard, right? That,
exactly.
Like, BP doesn't build pylons anymore. God.
But I read somewhere that someone was like, hey, you know, it's a really good idea to, at around 16 SCVs, to upgrade your command center and start using the Mule. And I was like, well, that sounds extremely reasonable. So actually, my most recent game with Terran, I did do that.
Huh.
And definitely felt like there was an impact.
Wait, so did he say, like, get 16 SCVs and then just, like, instantly upgrade the command center and then...
It was something along those lines. I think it was a Team Liquid thread, but I'm not positive. Someone said that they have a replay of David Kim doing this. And I think David Kim is doing it. I should be doing it.
Yeah, I mean, he's like the bourgeois of SC2, and it's like not even out yet. He's like done it, man. No Kespa power outage to steal his soul.
Yeah.
Haha, I just had to sneak that one in there. I couldn't resist that, could I? Shameless. Are there any other like notable macro mechanics? I mean, there's just like so much new stuff in the game.
Zerg Queen.
Oh, but what about for Terran? I'm more than ready to talk about Queens.
Yeah. nothing coming to mind.
Did we do it? We're awesome. I mean, we just nailed it on the head. Oh yeah, I did want to say that it's interesting to note that because you have the Mule and the Supply Depot options, you always have to weigh that against not having your scanner sweep, which is a pretty fundamental resource for Terran in StarCraft 1. I mean, so you scan around to like see if he's going carriers. You scan Expos, if you're playing against a Zerg player, you scan the Zerg's main to see if he's going Hive, that sort of thing.
Right.
Terran versus Terran, you scan every 5 seconds because you have 30 command centers, so, you know, why not? And in this game, in StarCraft 2, is that okay to just have lying around? Or, you know, I can conceive of situations where you'd get a bunch of mules, and then a bunch of cloak units would come in and you'd smack yourself.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like really interesting the sort of decisions you have to make about managing your resources. So I'm hoping they remain as interesting as they feel right now. Because right now it's just like this big unknown abyss. And potentially it's just like, no, I'd never get mules. Mules are awful. They're just like the worst thing in the game. It's kind of like AVP2. I remember I was actually talking to Jonathan Wendell, who's a Fatality, very well-known first-person shooter gamer. And he's talking about AVP, or Aliens vs. Predator 2. He's like, oh yeah, man, I wish they had more, you know, more AVP2 tournaments. That game's awesome, man. It was so good. And I'm like, oh, well, what do you play? It's like, I play the Predator. Everyone plays a Predator. The other ones are awful. I'm like, oh. Sounds like a nice, balanced, competitive game. Have a bunch of Predators running around invisible. Nice. But yeah, so like, the Zerg Queen, I can't macro that many larvae. It's just like too many larvae. And
yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
I have the same issue.
Yeah, it's just like too much. Because I'm used to having like 3, 4, 5 hatches, you know, like just off 2, 3 bases or something like that. And I don't know if the queen's supposed to be, like, a substitute for a hatchery, whether that's okay. So that's the sort of thing I'm, like, trying to consider is, you know, if I, like, go for just one hatch with a queen, is that equivalent to 2 hatches? Is it better? Is it worse? It feels a little bit better than 1 hatch just because you can get 4 larvae extra at a time.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that just, like, can't be bad. and also the queen gives you, like, anti-air to stuff. But I guess it's the queen's vulnerability, the fact that you can just, like, kill her off and just, like, have your economy so hampered as a result. Have you, like, in your games, have you experienced anyone doing anything like that? Like, rushing to kill a Zerg queen or something?
I have...
Just, like, not getting it?
Yeah, I haven't run into that particular problem. I haven't... I mean, I've only played, like, 15 ladder games, and most of them involve me rushing my opponent.
And they're just shocked. They're just like, yeah. What? This isn't a novice map? Yeah, because like with Zerg, I want to play around with queens, like trying to use them and stuff, but it really makes me wonder, do I need to early expand? Can I get away with one hatching? Because the one thing that for some reason just blows my mind as to how much it actually changes the game is the fact that Zerg don't have Scourge. Zerg cannot just claim air control like they can in StarCraft 1. So it makes me feel a lot more tentative with moving out with my overlords. I feel a little bit more tentative about expanding all over the place because, like, the air units are super good in SC2. So, I mean, that's another thing that I think I want to research a lot more is how different the races are in terms of behavior from StarCraft 1 because I know that I'm definitely suffering from that. that applying my good old school logic to my new game and going, well, why doesn't it work? Hopefully, yeah. We'll see it emerge. I'm actually curious, how were your 15 ladder games that you've played? Because I know that we've mostly been playing against each other.
I mean, it's been fun. I guess I've played 16. I'm 13-3.
Ho!
Managed to qualify for one of the Platinum Division number 5. You know, I mean, most of the players I played have not been particularly good, so the games weren't interesting. But
They've
I played some really good...
sub-Platinum.
Yeah. But I played some really good games. I wish the replays were shareable, just so show them with people and talk about them some. But yeah, I mean, I've got my ass kicked a couple times, and I played a couple games. Had a really fun 30-minute Terran versus Terran last night. It's probably the most interesting game I've played.
What happened? So tell me about that game, and then I want to hear about one of your ass kickings, like one of those experiences.
Sure. So the Terran versus Terran was fun. I mean, I'd never played the matchup. I'm coming in with a whopping, maybe, I don't know, 6 games with Terran under my belt. It's all guesswork. And I mean, I think one of the things that a lot of people have noticed is that Reapers are really,
awesome.
Really nice.
Are sweet.
And, yeah. So I've been starting most of my games off with a Reaper harass. And against most of the Zerg and Protoss opponents I've played against, that's pretty much the end of the game right there.
Really?
I wanted to see how they worked against Terran, so I decided to do the same thing. Turns out that Terran can get a Siege Shank by the time I had Reapers in their base. I don't know if that's because my build sucked or if that's just the way it is. And they really aren't that effective against a Siege Shank.
Unsurprisingly.
Yeah, so my little Reaper harass was mostly my Reapers dying, and I think maybe I killed, like, a SCV. He was going a very typical StarCraft 1 strategy, double factory, straight to Siege Shanks, and started trying to control the map. So I immediately went, did the same thing. We both expanded. We both started playing, you know, Siege Shank games. The terrain, I don't remember the name of the map we were on, but the terrain was very interesting. So there were some really cool Siege Shank placements going on. And he was actually doing a better job than me of predicting where to put his tanks on which ledges. We had a standoff for a little bit. I managed to take the upper hand for a little bit with a medevac, which is the dropship, where I dropped on his highest tanks. And
were you doing anything like mass medevac, similar to mass dropship in Terran vs. Terran?
No, I was trying to do a lot of siege shanks at the time. I wanted a couple medevacs to mess with him, and I at one point I probably did consider doing more drops, but that idea ended up just not happening this particular game. And then what I did is I'm like, well, I felt like his macro was better than mine. Watching the replay, it turned out we were about the same. But I was worried.
You sicko.
He was so hardcore siege tanks. So I was like, well, I'm going to try these Banshees out.
just give them a whirl.
Well, I mean, I've gotten one of my very first games involved me just dying horribly to 6 Banshees. Because they cloak and then they obliterate everything on the ground. So I was hoping that I could build up to 6 or 8 Banshees without him noticing, so he'd keep pumping out his siege tanks, and worked out exactly the way I planned. And there's this really beautiful moment, which is the main reason I wanted to show people the replay, where he has just like massive amounts of siege tanks. And I come at them from an angle with 6 Banshees, and he naturally starts moving them. And he moves them straight into the path of my siege tanks, which he couldn't see because I was hiding them behind one of those, like, grass lines which cut off the vision. And I just, like, destroyed half his army in about 2 seconds.
Oh, that is, like, so awesome. Like, some of these new features are just super cool. Like the shrubbery. I don't know what else to call it. Just, like, the you can't see past the... And that's so sweet to see you, or to hear that you did that sort of nice little tactical abuse. Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite experiences is actually what you did to me, which is, it was a Zerg versus Terran on Blistering Sands, and I was trying to do my fancy-schmancy Queen Jank, I was, like, really expanding, and I'm, like, doing a perfect job. I did not miss a single larva injection. I was, like, seriously pro. And then you come in with 1 Void Ray and just target fire my hatchery and kill it. And, like, I had both my queens wailing on it, and it just... instantly killed me, and I was it's like not fair, and I was like freaking out, and that's actually the point in time where I was like, where's my scourge, man, where's my scourge at, and I like couldn't get it, and Hydras are tier 2, and all of a sudden I realize that it's real hard for Zerg to have super solid anti-air early on. So I don't know if that's going to have a huge effect on it, but it makes you realize how much you... I guess how much you just didn't appreciate. How much you took for granted the fact that those Hydras were tier 1 in StarCraft 1.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've been going for about 30 minutes now. So, Tristan, I wanted you to share, like, either a cool opening you're thinking about, a cool idea, or your favorite StarCraft 2 experience. If you want, I could tell the story of me watching you play against Psionic Reaver.
Okay, why don't you go first, since I'm...
Thank you. Oh my god, it was so cool. So, okay, so I'm chatting with Tristan on Ventrilo, and Tristan's like, oh, I'm playing someone who I think streams on TeamLiquid.net. It's like, I think it's Psionic Reaver. So I lit up Psionic Reaver's stream, and I get to see Tristan playing against Psionic Reaver from Psionic's point of view. And it was, like, the sweetest thing I have ever seen in my life. Because, like, I see everything. I could cheat, but I'm not gonna. But the fact that I could just, like, makes my heart rate go up. I'm getting all excited, you know? Oh, my God. So I'm, you know, Psionic Reaver opened... It was Protoss vs. Protoss. Psionic Reaver opened up with 2 Gate Zealots, as did Tristan. And Psionic Reaver instantly transitioned to, like, 3 or 4 Gateway Stalker. So basically, like, the Zealot into Dragoon style. And then was, like, taking an expansion. And Tristan's going mass Zealots, from my point of view. All I'm really seeing is Zealots. And I don't know if Tristan's expanded or not. Psionic Reaver wasn't really able to, like, check that at the early parts. So I don't know really what's going on Tristan's base. Psionic Reaver's being super aggressive with his Zealots, like attacking up the ramp to Tristan's concave and like doing pretty good. So I'm thinking, wow, I know Psionic Reaver's been playing like nonstop for the last few days. I he must know something I don't, because man, he's just being so aggressive. And then so there's these big dances, and Tristan's Zealot army just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and so do the Stalker armies. The Stalkers are microing. It looks like Tristan keeps having to get repelled. So then I see Tristan get the Sentry, which has 2 abilities, and the one I thought Tristan was going to use was the, what is it called? It's like the Gravity Defender Sphere. It's one of those...
Yeah, I don't remember the name.
It's a generic sci-fi title, but it's like a sphere, and all of your units in the sphere take less damage from range. It's like a protection spell. So I thought Tristan was going to be using that, so his Zealots would be pretty good against the Stalkers. But ho-ho, did he have a little present in store? Instead, he used the Sentries to create force fields behind the Sentries, or excuse me, behind the Stalkers, so his Zealots would be able to surround the Stalkers really easily. And it messed up, like, the first 3 or 4 tries, but then it worked just one time, and, like, 9 of Psionic Reaver's Stalkers fell, and I was just like, oh! I felt like I was watching my son win the Star League Finals. I, like, freaked out. And, of course, Psionic Reaver's like, oh, cool, and just has, like, a friendly little, like, question session. He's just, like, trying to learn the game. And I'm like, yes! Get him, Tristan! Get him! Show him who the boss is! You know, so that was an incredibly rewarding experience. It motivated me to go play.
I mean, that was I guess that was sort of one of my favorites, too. And I want to give props to Warblade, who absolutely stomped on me using the same thing. So I'm just passing on the information to Psionic Reaver, who can now go on and obliterate another unsuspecting Protoss player.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like telling jokes. You know, someone tells you a great joke. What you do is you go tell it to someone else. You don't give them any credit for it. I mean, that's the way StarCraft 2 is going to work. It's just going to be people stealing builds from other people who stole builds in the first place. So,
yeah.
A nice little good old chain of plagiarism. Hopefully, it'll eventually churn out some brilliance.
Definitely.
Do you have any other particular favorite moments you'd like to share?
We covered my 2 favorites. There were you 2, the Void Rip moment and that PvP. That TBT,
God,
which I talked about, was my favorite, probably my favorite game I played so far.
Yeah.
It's hard to sort of narrow in on particular moments just because I've been having so much fun.
I will admit, I'm having a lot of fun with the Reapers. So right now, what I'm currently trying to do is, against Zerg, develop a 1 Barracks Reaper rush. Straight into an early expansion. And I've been playing around with that quite a bit. The problem is, that my macro's awful. I'm having so much difficulty dealing with the ability to select multiple buildings. I might just abandon ship and just go back to hockeying one at a time straight up.
Yeah.
But you know what? We've been going for about 35 minutes, it looks like, right now. So, you know what? That will wrap up the very first Team Liquid StarCraft II beta podcast. I'll be doing this once a week, every single Friday, so that way you can, on your big drive home from work on the way, you know, to the weekend, you can listen to the soothing, sultry voices talking about StarCraft II to get pumped up for your obvious weekend of nerdism. I mean, I guarantee that no one listening to this podcast is going to be like, Friday night, let's party. No way. Friday night, time to get some Dr. Pepper, turn the lights out, and turn on that reassuring blue light from the StarCraft II beta. So you know what? Thanks so much. I'm Sean Day9 Plot.
I'm Tristan Mantra Brand.
And that wraps up the very first Team Liquid StarCraft II beta podcast. Cheers!